Well, it's that time again, and the doctor is in. Yeah, this is Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon, and I'm glad you could join us again this week as we delve into the tech world. That exciting, strange, and amazing world of technology that we've come to love so much. Yes, indeed. This is episode number 14 for December the 10th, 2005, and I'm glad you could join us again this week. I tell you, we've just had a tremendous week in technology. Weird and strange things have happened all week long, and it's been a lot of fun. And, of course, if you watch, and I say watch, you probably don't watch, you probably read, because it doesn't actually move on the page, but if you read thecomputercurmudgeon.com, my blog, then you've been kept abreast of all the things that are happening in the technological realm this week. And if you haven't, well, I'm glad you tuned in to the podcast so that you can get caught up. I mean, you don't want to be behind. This is where it's happening, all right? All right, let's start looking at some of the things that happened in the news this past week. On December the 5th, I blogged a little blurb that I thought was awesome. A Linux user group dressed up two guys in penguin suits. Now, you might say, well, that happens all the time. I mean, Linux user groups and guys in penguin suits. Yeah, okay, you know. Yeah, but see, what was cool about this is that these two guys then invaded a Microsoft event and started handing out free Linux CDs. Now, dude, you gotta love that. And then on top of that, they had a guy videotape it and put the video out on the web. So we've got video of the penguin invasion of a Microsoft event. You gotta love that. So go to my blog, click on that, and watch the video. It is pretty wild. The penguin invasion. Don't you know that Gates and Company just loved that? You know, all their Microsofties gathered together, and here's a bunch of penguins handing out free Linux CDs. That's just too good. All right, the other thing that happened this week, pretty cool, was that podcast. Hey, that's what you're listening to right now, a podcast. What do you know? Podcast became the new word for the year of 2005. It beat out a lot of other terms that we've heard fairly regularly this year, like bird flu and life hack and just all kinds of other things that have come up this year, but podcast beat them all out as the new word. It will be in the Oxford Dictionary starting next year as an official new word. Well, podcast is word of the year. Well, hey, you know, you're right on the cutting edge of societal evolution by listening to this podcast. All right. So podcast is the new word of the year. You know, you need to work on your vocabulary, right? So listening to Dr. Bill can help you with your vocabulary. You can learn that podcast is spelled P-O-D-C-A-S-T. You know, in previous episodes, we have learned how to spell the, T-H-E. We've learned to spell computer, C-O-M-P-U-T-E-R. And amazingly, we have learned to spell curmudgeon, C-U-R-M-U-D-G-E-O-N. And by being able to spell all of those words, you can go to thecomputercurmudgeon.com and read all the fascinating things that are happening in technology in my blog. So there you go. All right. We're educational here on Dr. Bill. I tell you, that's great. Okay, I'm pushing it, but go with me here. All right. Something else that I found this week that was pretty neat is we have all kinds of open source software. You know that. And I talk about open source quite a bit. Matter of fact, we've got a few really neat open source things to share with you on this week's podcast. So stay tuned for that. But I found this really interesting. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation. You know, I've done a lot of different kinds of publications, and I've worked with various churches and things and organizations. And we're always looking for clip art. I don't know about you, but you know, it's got to be where used to you could go find clip art and it was free and available and you could use it. Now everybody's got clip art sites, but they're selling it. You know, you got to pay X, Y, Z, whatever. And it's kind of annoying, you know? I mean, clip art's clip art. It's not like you're buying some amazing artwork, you know, Picasso or something like that. I mean, it's just clip art. Well, there's a site for open source clip art. Now, that's pretty cool. It's, you know, open source being free, available, things that people have done, you know, just for the joy of doing it. That's the reason a lot of people do open source software, is they just have a need for a particular piece of software. They're excellent programmers, and so they write the software, and then they say, hey, this will help somebody else, and they make it available for free. And that's the beauty behind open source. Well, same thing here for clip art, open source clip art. So there's a site you can go to on the web. It's openclipart.org. And if you go there, you'll find totally royalty-free and advertisement-free clip art. There's a lot of clip art, you know, that the clip art looks pretty cool, but they've got this, like, watermark in it unless you buy it. And this is just totally free, and you can download it and use it. That's pretty handy. So I really thought that was cool. All right, we were talking earlier about that Microsoft event. Microsoft has been in the news a couple of times this week, and this is one of those times. Microsoft was slapped with a $32 million fine. And as I say in the blog, that might even actually eat into some of Uncle Bill's bubblegum money. You know, $32 million to him is probably pocket change. But he was slapped with a fine in South Korea. And basically, what it was is the country's Fair Trade Commission, you know, their version of the FTC, ordered Microsoft to unbundle its instant messaging client and media player from Windows because they felt like that they had unfair practices by having that in the operating system. And, you know, it caused other companies that made instant messaging clients and media players from being able to compete, you know, since it was bundled right into the operating system. And so they told them they need to unbundle it. Well, Microsoft was, shall we say, reticent in doing that. And so they were slapped with a $32 million fine. My. So we'll see how that comes out. All right. You also know that Dr. Bill loves to provide helpful software to the masses. Yes, indeed. I love to just come up with free and open source software that will meet your need instead of you having to go out and buy a whole bunch of utilities or whatever. I mean, after all, Windows in and of itself is a very insecure, shall we say, operating system. And so anything we can do to make it more secure and particularly not have to pay any money to do it. I mean, Microsoft's got this new program they're coming out with called OneCare. And they haven't disclosed yet how much it's going to ultimately cost businesses. But when you think about the chutzpah involved in coming out with a really insecure, full of holes, house of cards operating system, charging you money for it, and then turning around and saying, oh, by the way, if you want it not to blue screen and die, if you want it to be safe from spyware and viruses, if you want to protect your data, then you're going to have to subscribe to our program, our OneCare program, and then we'll provide all these utilities to make the operating system that we turned out safer. Oh, my. I mean, come on, guys. Why not just improve your product so that it is safe? You know, you've got this commitment to security. Uh-huh, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Well, anyway, there is a way to do it with open source software that is free and easy, and the doctor can show you how. So that's why we have Geek Software of the Week. And this week's Geek Software of the Week is a doubleheader. Two for the price of one. And, of course, the one is free, so the second is free, so both of them are free. It's because they're open source. Yeah. All right. Two for the price of one. And the two are, drum roll please, Win Pooch and Clam Win. Okay. I know the names are weird. A lot of open source projects have weird names. You know, it's geeks. Okay. Come on. Give them a break. They're sitting there in a dark room drinking their Jolt Cola. You know, their hair is real greasy because they haven't washed it in days. They're hunched over a keyboard, and they sit there and go, what am I going to call it? Oh, I know. I'll call it Win Pooch. Okay. All right. Good software, weird name, but hey, you know? Okay. Well, here's what it is, basically. The Clam antivirus project has been around for a long time. And it's really neat in one sense, because when you think about it, this is a group of folks that have decided to do an open source antivirus. And so they're having to do what Symantec and a lot of different other antivirus companies do, which is stay on top of the antiviruses, on top of the viruses that are being released practically daily all over the world by evil people that should be shot releasing these viruses. But they've got to keep up with all these viruses, and they've got to write code that will detect the virus and then, quarantine it or fix it or whatever. That's a tremendous undertaking to do. And so here's a bunch of guys that are doing it open source. They're doing it for free. However, their Clam antivirus has a few limitations. So many limitations that actually in the past I have not used it, because one of the major things is you can use it to scan your system and it will find viruses. And it's actually, really nice. It's got 48,000 plus viruses that it will find. However, you can only find viruses on your system by actually scanning on purpose. Now, between you and me, most users aren't going to do it. I mean, most users don't even download virus signature updates. They don't update their antivirus nearly enough. You need to be doing that at least once a week. I mean, tell you the truth, I do it every time I get on my computer. Okay? Call me anal retentive, but that's just me. I just want to be safe, all right? But the thing is, at least once a week, you ought to be updating your antivirus signatures. Most users don't even do that. The idea that they would then turn around and, every day or every other day or whatever, scan their system on purpose by decision is a stretch, okay? So Clam has not been that useful, because you have to actually decide, today I will scan my hard drive for viruses and start it. It doesn't automatically detect them in the background. So, okay, that doesn't make it terribly useful for most normal people. Now if you're a super geek and, you got this urge to constantly be scanning your system, then okay, that would be fine. But let me tell you a little secret. I hate to admit this. Even I don't do that. And if anybody's weird about things like that, it's the doctor, all right? So, no. Okay, that's just not that useful. However, another open source project has come along and said, okay, you guys have developed this great antivirus engine. You've developed and are maintaining all of these virus signatures. I'll come up with a way to take your work, incorporate it into mine, and call it WinPooch. Now, like I said, that was not exactly a flash of inspiration to call it WinPooch, but his idea is, go with me here, that this is like a guard dog. Get it? WinPooch. It's a guard dog for your system. And then he took it a step further. He said, well, as long as we're going to run something, it's going to be checking for viruses in real time. Why don't we also check for any change to the system to block Trojans, spyware, adware? Any change in your system that might be coming along, we'll have WinPooch, this watchdog program, say, hey, wait. And of course, to be cute, they have a little pooch come up and go, bark, bark. Actually, it's a real rough sounding, rough, rough kind of bark, not a bark, bark. But that was cuter, so hey. Anyway, so any change in your system, you have a barking noise, and WinPooch pops up and says, hey, wait, this is the change, this is what it's about to do, what do you want to do with it? So that's the idea behind WinPooch. Now, again, it's somewhat limited in that it won't scan for and find Trojans and adware. It will prevent it from being installed on your system. So the bottom line is you need to have a system that is clean already, and then if you install ClamWin and WinPooch, it can then be protected. You with me? Okay. So here's what you need to do if you want to use it. Now, I have instructions in my blog. First thing you do is you download ClamWin, and I give you the link for that. It's clamwin.com, and there's a little more to it than that to actually get to the download page. So I'll put that in the blog, and you can go check that out. Download ClamWin and install it first. Key here, install that first, okay? Then download WinPooch. Now, it's a project on SourceForge.net, and again, that's a fairly long URL, so I've got that in the blog. Check that out. And install WinPooch, and WinPooch will detect ClamWin and say, oh, you got ClamWin. Cool. All right, I'll use that. And you then can go in, you can set security levels, you can do, you know, a couple little neat things. And the other weird thing is down in your taskbar, you'll have this little gray dog with squinty eyes, and his eyes are scanning the whole time, back and forth, back and forth. And that's how you know it's working. It's actually kind of odd. But anyway, but I've been experimenting with it, and it finds changes as you occur on your system. You know, like if you install additional new software, it'll come up and go, oh, I found this, you know. And you go, yeah, I know. And you click, okay, I meant to do that, and you're okay. But see, what if you were just surfing along, everything was cool, and you got WinPooch popping up saying, wait a minute, something's about to change your system. Then you know you've hit a site that's trying to install some adware or spyware or whatever. And you can stop it. All right. So pretty cool. Geek Software of the Week. Check it out. All righty. Other things that are happening this week that caught my eye that I really enjoy is Firefox 1.5. Now, you know that I really, really love Firefox. And I told you last week that 1.5, the new version, is out. Very nice. But one of the things I really haven't gotten into in great depth is a lot of the personalization. There's a 25-cent word for you. It doesn't exactly roll off my tongue. At any rate, personalization of your web browser using Firefox. I really hadn't gotten into it. I've pretty much just been running it, you know, stock, just the way it comes. But this week I found a theme that I really like. It's called Noia, N-O-I-A, 2-0 Extreme. It's got a really crisp, high-tech, colorful feel to it, and I kind of like it, so I thought I would feature it on the blog. And as long as I was doing that, I went ahead and put in Faster Fox, which I like. It speeds things up tremendously. I've told you about that before. And then another one that I found that I knew that Belinda, my wife, would like a lot. She likes to check the weather. Now me, I wear the same thing, rain, cold, sun, doesn't matter. You know, I just go on out, and if I get wet, I get wet. You know, that's just the way it is. I don't care that much. But she likes to know in advance, is it going to be cold? It's going to be rainy? You know, whatever. So I saw that they had a little forecast thing that incorporated AccuWeather weather forecasting right into your browser. And I thought, I don't know about that. You know, I'm not much on these weather doodads, you know. But this one I really like, and I'll tell you why. It sits down in the lower, this is by default. You can change where it appears with its setup. But by default, it appears in the lower right-hand corner of your browser on that little bar that's at the bottom that really, nothing as much is in that bar anyway, okay? I mean, it's not like anything else was there that it's replacing, you know? So down in that little bar, you got, like in my case right now, as we record this, we've got this little green thing that if I hover over it, it will give me the weather map from AccuWeather for the southeast. And I can see that, wow, it's clear as it can be. I mean, without even going outside, I know there's not a cloud in the sky. Isn't that just amazing? And if I were to click on that little green dot, it would give me even more detail. But just by hovering over it, I see that. If I hover over the next icon, it says, now in Greensboro, North Carolina, it is sunny and 25 degrees. Now, as I record this podcast, it's 8:39 in the morning on Saturday. So, Saturday morning at 8:39, it is sunny and 25 degrees. The wind is calm at 0 miles per hour. Wow. And I don't even have to go outside to find out. All right, then if I hover over the next one, it says that the forecast for today, Saturday, is sunny to partly cloudy, 51 degrees Fahrenheit, wind 5 miles per hour from the south. Pretty cool. If I hover over the next one, it gives me tomorrow's forecast, Sunday. Partly sunny, breezy, 49 degrees Fahrenheit, wind from the west at 11 miles per hour. How cool is that? And besides that, you now have the forecast from Dr. Bill for the weekend. That's assuming, of course, you're listening almost live. If you're not, you're going, well, that's old news. But at any rate, you get the idea. The idea is you have a forecast right there at the bottom of your browser. You just hover over it, you're done. You don't have to go to a special weather site. This is the part I like. You don't have to run the risk of all the pop-up ads installing a bunch of junk on your system because it's right there in your browser. Pretty cool. So I like that. And, you know, I've set up all my different systems to have that and kind of gotten used to it. You know, I just kind of like that. It's not obtrusive like a lot of different things. So there you go. Now, speaking of going to a website and hitting it and having something pop up and install spyware or adware, where are most rootkits coming from these days? Meaning, where are installations of rootkits coming from? Well, a new study has found that a lot of these rootkits are being installed through very malicious spyware and adware. Now, you know, spyware and adware has always been a problem, and they've created tracking, you know, systems where you go visit a website and then now they can track you all over the web and use that information, you know, in ways that you don't want them to use it. So it's already been bad enough, but now a lot of these things are installing rootkits. You may say, well, Dr. Bill, what's a rootkit? Well, a rootkit is a pretty evil chunk of code. Let me read you the Wikipedia definition. A rootkit is a set of software tools frequently used by a third party, usually an intruder, after gaining access to a computer system. These tools are intended to conceal running processes. Now, check this out. Conceal running processes. Files are system data, which helps an intruder maintain access to a system without the user's knowledge. Rootkits are known to exist for a variety of operating systems, such as Linux, Solaris, and versions of Microsoft Windows. A computer with a rootkit is called a rooted computer. Basically, it's been compromised. There are rootkits that go in and change the kernel of the operating system to provide backdoor access and mess you up bad. Okay? So, rootkits are evil. So, the fact that there are now some spyware and adware that are installing the rootkits, man, that's bad news. However, good news is, if you use the Geek Software of the Week this week, ClamWin and WinPooch together, the tag team of ClamWin and WinPooch. Yeah, right. Anyway, if you use those together, then it will stop the adware and spyware from, or allow you, really, to stop the adware and spyware from being installed because it'll give you a warning if anything's about to change or modify your system. Pretty neat. So there you go. All right. And now, a bit of history for this week in tech. Oops, wrong podcast, I'm sorry. history this week was made even clearer when Tim Berners-Lee, it was found, saved the first web page. Ta-da! Yes, indeed. We know that the internet has been around for a long time. Even by Dr. Bill standards. But the web, see, there's a difference. The internet is like the underlying, you know, shall we say, foundation. And the web was built on top of the internet. Okay? So the web is that graphical, cool, click on a hyperlink and go somewhere kind of thing. Okay? And that, the World Wide Web, was created by Tim Berners-Lee as part of his master's project in 1992. Well, when Tim, if I can call him Tim, when he created it, he started actually using it, well, of course, to do various things. And one of the things he did was he created a web page, the very first web page, which he saved for posterity. And we now have a link to it in our blog. You can go look at the first webpage. Ta-da! It's boring, as you might expect. Black print on a white page, boring. But hey, it's the first. Come on, guys. History. I don't know about you, but I'm a little bit of a history buff when it comes to some things. And I thought it was cool. His header here is, What's New in 92? Because, of course, he created the web in 92. And they talk about a new browser that they're going to come out with from CERN. It's version 1.1, the first official release of this browser. Wow. And he goes on and talks about a few other things. And then he talks about next issue in April, I'll be doing this. And he signs it Tim BL, Tim Berners-Lee. And, of course, we know now that he has since been knighted, so he's now Sir Tim Berners-Lee. Dude, all right. So anyway, I thought that was pretty cool. A bit of history that we can refer to. The first web page. All right. Well, a couple other things I want to mention. One is, you know, I go on about how cool Firefox is. All right? That's cool. And I really like Firefox. Don't get me wrong. And I think it's the safest browser out there. All right. However, when version 1.5 was released, though it was tested and tested and tested, they did find a flaw in it, an unpatched flaw. So far, as I speak, it has not been patched. Now, I'm sure they will get around to it very quickly. But it is a pretty important thing to mention that this patch hopefully will come out, because this flaw is pretty intensive. Got a link to it. And it might cause Firefox to crash. Now, I want to emphasize here, it won't endanger your system security, but it might cause Firefox to crash if you run across a web page that has, you know, this flaw, if you will, and Firefox will crash and you'll have to restart it. Well, you know, that's bad. Okay, yes, that's bad, but it's not super bad like Internet Explorer, where the flaws in Internet Explorer will compromise your system security and bring it down permanently, okay? So, yes, it is a flaw, and yes, I know that I should report it because of due diligence. I should definitely report it. However, it's still not going to be as big a security issue as Internet Explorer. So, again, the patch I'm sure will be coming out soon. These guys stay on top of these things really well, but I did need to report that there is an unpatched flaw in Firefox 1.5. So there you go. And then finally for this week, I did want to mention, I tell you, sometimes things get announced and you go, man. Now, to give you a little appreciation of this next news bit, if you will, I can remember back quite a few years ago when I had a computer. Now, this was, I'm dating myself here. This was before the IBM PC was released, before it was released. There were a whole lot of other computers that were coming out, and only super mega geek hobbyists like myself were even fooling with computers. I mean, I go back to the early 70s with computers. That's kind of a ways back. And, you know, building them from circuit boards kind of thing, and subscribing to Kilobyte magazine, which was a computer hobbyist magazine that only super amazing, incredible, you know, pencil geeks subscribed to, because who in the world even heard of a hobbyist computer? Computers were, you know, the size of buildings back then. Well, anyway, I was one of those, I'm sorry. And so I started looking at different computers, and I ended up buying a Radio Shack color computer. That was my first one. And I maxed it out as best I could. You know, when I originally bought it, I bought it on sale with 4K, not meg, 4K of memory. And I immediately maxed it out to as much memory as I could possibly get, as much as Radio Shack supported in the color computer, which was 32K. Whoa, man, that's a lot of memory. All right. Yeah. Anyway, that was my first computer. But my second computer was awesome. It was state of the art. Thousands of dollars. I saved up, oh man, for this computer. It was a Texas Instruments professional computer. Now, let me tell you this. Even if you saw it today, it would look cool. I mean, this thing was awesome. And it had a keyboard. You couldn't believe this keyboard. You start typing on it, and it felt like you're typing on velvet. Oh, man, this was such a cool computer. And it was expensive. Oh, man. But the thing is, it only had floppy drives. And I'm talking five and a half inch floppy drives. Okay, and it had two of them. So you could go from the operating system to a data drive. Hey, cool. It had a color screen. Man, that was cool. All right. But then one day, they started talking about hard drives. And I really wanted a hard drive. And so one day, they had this amazing special. Now, this is back when I was living in Dallas, Texas. And this was like high-tech area. I mean, it was Texas Instruments. You know, we were right there at Texas Instruments. And they had this really great sale. They had a hard drive for $850. Oh, man. I thought, what a great buy. $850 for a hard drive. And you say, Dr. Bill, what in the world size hard drive? $850? I mean, I can go out right now today for $60 and get a 100 gig hard drive. So what kind of hard drive was this for $850? Well, you got to remember, we're back in the early 80s. We're talking a 5 meg hard drive. First hard drive I ever bought, 5 meg, not gig, 5 meg hard drive. Now, to put that in perspective, I've got a thumb drive that's got 1 gig on it. A thumb drive, all right? You can buy a 1 gig thumb drive for $50-$60 now. 1 gig! Now, to put that in perspective, that's 1,024 megabytes on a thumb drive. This hard drive I bought was 5 megabytes for $850, and that was on sale. Normally over $1,000. So I was real excited to get that. Well, now, they just announced this week, Samsung announced an 8 gigabyte DIMM. Now, you know, a DIMM, for those of you that are not geeks that build your own computers, a DIMM is a stick of memory. Okay, make it as simple as I can. One stick of memory, 8 gigabytes. Dude. So if you got like 2 memory slots, you could have 16 gig of memory. Now, I'm not talking hard drive here. I'm talking memory. All right. I tell you, makes me just salivate thinking about an 8 gig DIMM. And of course, they really did it for servers because, you know, servers these days, you need a tremendous amount of memory. They're serving out a lot of things, and particularly the new Blade servers and 1U servers, you know, you got a very minute amount of space, and you need to cram as much as you can into that amount of space, so that's why they came out with an 8 gig DIMM. Pretty cool. Love to have one, but alas, I'm sure it cost way too much for me to consider, so I guess I won't get it. But anyway, that's about it for the podcast this week. We have just about, actually, we've run over time. So we will head on out of here. Remember until next week that the doctor is out. But I'll be back.